What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care. So sit back, relax, and defocus.
Well, hey, everybody. The Defocus Media Podcast is back. I'm Jennifer Lyerly, and I am joined with Dr. Daryl Glover.
Dr. Daryl in the house. What's going on, Jen? How you living?
I am doing really good. I think we've got so much going on just in our personal lives outside of even the podcast. So, you know, Daryl, you're practicing. You got your practice in Nigeria. You've got your little boy who's 2.5 now. My little girl is 7 months old, and she just started crawling, just got a tooth, and I'm looking to buy into a private practice here in the next couple of months that I've been working at. And life's been so crazy that we're keeping up has been tough, and that's why I depend so much on our friend, Dr. Jackie Garlick's emails. And when we get a chance to talk to her, I know that I'm about to get just like a huge dump of information in my brain, and I'm needing it now more than ever this year.
I know that's right. I mean, that 2020 Glance newsletter, that has saved my life. I mean, it has everything all in one email on Monday mornings. I look forward to it when I wake up. Might not get to it every Monday, but I do get to it most Mondays. But I'm so thankful for Jackie for creating that for our industry.
So our guest is, without further ado, Dr. Jackie Garlick, who also has had a huge year in 2019.
Hi, guys. This is why I love doing podcasts with you. You guys are like so complimentary. We should do this once a week just for an ego boost for me.
Well, literally, like, after every email that I read, I could just be like, I'll just text you and be like, this was wonderful, Jackie, because it was really what goes through my mind.
You guys are so sweet.
Jackie, I feel like I haven't seen you at a conference this year. What's going on?
I know. Okay. Well, I was at Academy. I just was at Academy in October.
I wasn't there.
Yeah. I know. I wanted to go to Expo. Wait, did I go to Expo East? I think, yeah, we were at Expo East together, right?
Oh, that was so long ago. I guess because Wes came, Wes was the last one I went to. I completely forgot about East, but we did see each other. We were at the hotel, the rooftop, and it was raining that night. Remember?
Oh, I do remember. Yes. But it was great. It was great to see you. But yeah, I was going to go to West. I wanted to go to West, but I was like, I can't. It's just, anyway, I'm around, but I'm busy too. I am, I'm buying this practice that I'm working at now. So that's crazy. So I'm right there with you guys.
Now tell me this, you're buying a practice. Are we still going to get the 2020 Glance newsletter every Monday?
Oh my gosh. Yes, of course.
Okay. All right.
That. I love it. Yeah.
You know what'd be cool? Every week that you drop the newsletter, when you take over this practice, you should give us some type of tip or pearl in regards to practice management or ownership. Pretty sure a lot of folks would like that.
That is a good idea. I think the question would be if I even have one of those every week, because
I'm pretty sure you will, because you're going to be like, oh man, I never knew I had to do this. Oh wow, this would probably be better. So yeah. Your life is about to change. Ask Jen.
I know. Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a really good idea, Daryl. Yes, I'll look into that.
That was great. It was like pearl from Daryl. Ding. There he is. Well, on top of obviously, you know, you potentially bringing us some practice ownership pearls for next year, all year long, you always bring us the biggest FDA approvals and new study results and basically the top trending topics each week when we get your email. And so we always love at the end of the year, looking into the start of 2020, the year of eye care. I mean, what is going to be the biggest thing that got approved back in 2019 that is going to affect how we practice in 2020? And that's what the topic of today's podcast is. So everybody get your learning caps on, because we're about to actually really learn some applied knowledge.
Yeah. So, okay. I was thinking we could like run down some of these FDA approvals. It wasn't as many as we had in 2018. We had far more in 2018 than we did in 2019, but there's some good ones and some really exciting ones that have been FDA approved. So let's like dive in. So the first one I want to cover, which is probably the most recent one, is MiSight. Jen, you're probably all over this because I know you love like myopia control stuff. But MiSight is the new FDA approved contact lens that to slow myopia progression. So this one is approved for kids between the ages of 8 and 12 with a refractive error of minus 0.75 to minus 4 and with less than less than or equal to 0.75 diopters of cell. So Jen, I don't know if you got any traffic to your website from this, but you did such a good job explaining the concept of peripheral myopic defocus, which is what this lens is inducing. Okay, so this lens is a daily disposable lens. It corrects distance vision, but it also induces this peripheral myopic defocus. This is what's believed to reduce the stimulus causing myopia progression. So maybe I should let you do this because you did such a good job on that explanation of that article. I feel like I always was a little foggy on how exactly that worked and what that meant until I read your blog post. So props to you.
Well, thank you so very much, Elsa. I mean, it is a very complicated topic, but it's all about when you go back into when we were doing ray tracing in optics, and when you got that lens with the light coming through. So that's why I think many of us are like, oh no, like as soon as you see the ray tracing diagrams, that's the key principle to understanding peripheral defocus. But when you perfectly focus light with a myopic lens on the back of the eye, to hit it perfectly clear at the center, like you would with a minus prescription, the peripheral rays are going to be focusing back behind the eye. And then your accommodative system has to kick in to bring that peripheral ray forward. And that's what they think might be causing the increased prescription jump. So if you do peripheral defocus, the center is still going to fall perfectly clear. So it's like a centered distance design. But you get some plus coming from the peripheral areas so that the light doesn't fall behind the retina.
Yeah. See, that's like a great way to explain it. The design of that lens, it looks just like a multifocal lens. Have you used this at all? Oh, you know, you haven't because it's not coming out until 2020, actually. It's probably March 2020 when we'll get it. But do you have kids that you have like lined up for this or?
So I mean, I have been using Biofinity multifocal off label for some time. It has worked really well in my practice. But sure, I mean, would I prefer to fit kids in a daily disposable lens? Absolutely. Like, and would I prefer to be able to tell parents this is FDA approved? Absolutely. Okay, I was the geek that I found out about this on like a Saturday. Literally like texted our Cooper Vision rep here, Jane Childs, because she's awesome. I was like, Jane, this literally like is the best news I've ever heard. I was so excited that myopia control got FDA approval. Like to me, this is literally the most exciting thing that's probably happened in my entire career of practicing eye care. That's how big of a deal this is to me. Daryl, am I exaggerating?
No, you're dead on. I mean, there's two things that I love about this lens. Number one, it's a daily. Nothing gets better than a daily contact lens. Number two, the company that's actually putting this lens out is very friendly to optometry. All they care about is the eye care professional and their private practice or their practice in general. So you have the combination of both of those things. That's a win-win situation. Mm-hmm. We know we're going to have access to that lens. We know that we're working with a great company, and we know that myopia is a major deal. So for me, having a daily lens and the company being Cooper Vision that's producing it, man, that's a win-win situation in my eyes.
Well, let's go through because I think we're probably all a little bit different in how proactive we are with myopia management in our practice. Daryl, I mean, are you doing any myopia management lenses right now?
I am not doing any myopia management lenses. That's why I'm looking forward to this lens. I cannot wait.
But this would make you add it.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. This is like it's kind of like my starter kit, a good starting point, you know, just to get my feet wet and to understand it a tad bit more and, you know, just gain a little bit more traction in that world in general. So I'm looking forward to it. I know you're doing atropine treatment, Ortho-K, and you stated that Biofinity multifocal distance center option as well. Are you still doing that over at your new practice also?
I'm about 30-30, you know, as far as what I know, a lot of other practices probably skew more ortho-K, but I've found kind of an equal split amongst my patients has worked best. But I definitely think if I had a daily disposable soft multifocal, I might go a little bit more that direction, because it's just so much easier. It's so much easier for parents. It's so much easier for kids to have a soft daily disposable contact lens than an orthokeratology lens, in my opinion.
Do we know the cost of this lens by chance? Was there any literature out there in regards to what the cost will be, cost of goods, and what the MSRP will be?
I haven't heard anything on cost yet. So this, it's not out. It's expected to launch in March of 2020. So I assume we'll hear more closer to that time frame.
I do know, I'm not an insider. I do not work for Cooper or anything like that. But my understanding is that this will be probably a small launch to begin with. I don't think every single practice will be getting a fitting set right from the start, because fit sets are expensive. So you'll probably have like people that are doing more pediatrics or maybe more myopia management getting like a first swing. And then as it grows out, you'll see at the end of the year, more and more practices getting access. They do have on Cooper Vision's website, if you search My Site One Day, a little form that you can submit that you're interested in getting more information. So it's basically just kind of telling Cooper like, hey, I'm really interested in this, because they may not have you highlighted as a person who's doing pediatric myopia control right now.
Well, I know we push a lot of Cooper products, and I know we generate a lot of money, so I'm pretty sure we'll get it over at My Eye Doctor.
I'm sure someone at My Eye Doctor is negotiating on your behalf.
So I'm looking forward to using it. And as you mentioned earlier, shout out to Jay. She's so sweet. You know, I have nothing but love for her. You know, she even came to my wedding when I got married. I mean, that's how many people have invited a rep to their wedding? I mean, that's how good she is and how close I've been to her. I mean, I've known her since before I went to optometry school when I was a technician. I mean, she's great.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, she's the real deal.
Jackie, do you do a lot of myopia control lenses? Because I know you come from an ocular disease background. So this is a little bit different probably than how you've traditionally practiced.
I do. And when I was in an ophthalmology group in Wisconsin, this would have been a great thing, because I saw a lot more kids. Not even that many kids, honestly. It was more ocular disease and a lot of primary care, but I didn't see a ton of children. But at my office now, I see no children at all. So I work in the like financial district in downtown Boston, and there aren't kids there. So there's like, it's their parents. That's who I'm seeing.
So we'll have to tell you how it's going, basically.
Let me know.
Okay. Well, so we just found out like the one doctor in America that may not be impacted by this FDA approval.
I mean, I'm totally excited about it. And I'm also really excited. This isn't an FDA approval yet, but I'm really excited about MicroPine, which I'm expecting to hear, I think maybe end of 2020 or maybe 2021 for that. That's like the actual, maybe potentially FDA approved eye drop, you know, for that's low dose atropine. That I'm excited about. It also doesn't impact me, but this stuff is like very exciting, and you know, it may impact my kids, you know, so it's an exciting thing. I'm excited to hear how it works.
Okay, so I missed out on this one. You got to tell me more, Jackie.
Oh, MicroPine. Oh, so this isn't really part of the new FDA approval talk here, but I'm going to bring it up because it's really cool. You have to Google this. It is what's really cool about it. So it's MicroPine is by a company called Eyenovia. So they're investigating the use of low-dose atropine to treat myopia progression, which really isn't a new thing. As you said, Jen, you've been using that. But what is, and really their studies are building off of all these previous studies that have shown there's been a reduction in myopia progression by using low-dose atropine. But what the really cool thing is their eyedropper. Jen, have you seen this?
No, I'm literally sitting on pins and needles right now. I'm so excited.
You guys, I don't even work for this company. I should, because I talk about this thing so much. So the eyedropper, Google the Eyenovia MicroPine, and it's their eyedropper of the future. So they even have a video of a child on there holding this like device that will dispense this, you know, whatever amount of the eyedrop into this eye. But it's almost like I shouldn't say shoots out because that sounds bad, but it's a little spritz of an eyedrop. And this is all also going on the concept that like traditional eyedrop bottles dispense way too much medication. So, you know, the drop is running down your cheek. There's an issue with toxicity, and this design is completely different. So you have to Google it. It's like the coolest thing. It's like this it's very cool.
It's so beautiful too. I have seen this picture, and I didn't put it together. And yeah. it, It's like if Apple had designed an eye drop.
Yes. Yes. And so you like load the device by pushing down this button, and then to actually do it, you just hold it up in front of your eye and push another button. But they're going to be using it in not just, it's going to be, you'll be able to load different medications into this eyedropper bottle. So really the innovative thing is this potentially eyedropper of the future. Like we might be done with these traditional eyedrop bottles if we can be using these that dispense just the right amount of medication without over, you know, using too much drop. It's like microdosing, basically. It's very cool.
So let me ask you this. Is it connected to like an app where you can just access on your phone and know how much you've used, when you need to do your next drop or anything like that? Or is it just a cool dropper and they haven't advanced in technology like that yet?
We haven't done that. But so when I was at the booth at Academy, and depending on the type of medication will depend on how often you have to refill it. But they're also going to be using it for even like in-office dilation drops too, like for patients. So it's good for X amount of patients. I don't remember what all the numbers were that he told me, but there's nothing that they spoke about of it sort of connecting to some app. So no.
Daryl, your bright ideas just keep I'm sure that'll be an add-on that's coming.
Hey, anything you can control from your phone or track with your phone or your watch, I mean, that's priceless. Now that I have a kid, I'm all about convenience factor. You know, it makes a world of difference.
So this is so exciting. So we've got, so already in 2019, we've got our first soft multifocal contact lens, FDA approved for myopia management. There is a company actively in the process of getting an FDA approved low-dose atropine for myopia management. So we're about to have 2 out of 3 FDA-approved conversation here. Do you ever think that orthokeratology lenses will get FDA approval for myopia management?
I mean, I know there's a lot of research that it's done extremely well, but for me, it's just Ortho-K has always kind of had like a little gray cloud over its head for me. I'm just not into putting a lens that someone sleeps in and it pushes the cornea back. I mean, I've seen some real jacked up corneas come through my office from folks that have done that. And I prefer that soft contact lens world and atropine or some low dose form of atropine more than that. And I know atropine has some things that you have to look for, but I'm just not big into someone sleeping in a hard lens and pushing on that cornea. I mean, that's just not my world.
I've never really been into Ortho-K either, but I think that now if we have these other options of FDA approval, let's say that we get this drop and then we already have MySight. Like, I think even practitioners might lean more towards these options than doing an Ortho-K. But I've personally not done a lot of Ortho-K. So I don't know. What do you think, Jen?
So, you know, I think one, the appetite for MDs to approve Ortho-K, I think, is very low, because you'll hear the same stuff cited about, like, well, sleeping in a contact lens, we're not going to support that sort of thing. And I do get, like, there is infection risk with Ortho-K, though studies show that it's much less than a monthly disposable soft contact lens, for example. There's certain prescriptions, there's certain ranges where Ortho-K becomes almost your only option in the contact lens world, like the soft, and just the parameters you read out with the low sill availability that's only up to like a -4. Like there's going to be certain parameters that if a patient needs a contact lens to slow down myopia control, Ortho-K will become your only option. At the same time, if we're going to get FDA approval, one company will have to champion it, because FDA approval means extensive clinical testing that's submitted. It means a lot of money is getting put in there. And these smaller companies that are making RGPs, maybe with CooperVision owning Paragon now, they'll seek to do that. But I just don't know that there's going to be a financial appetite to put Ortho-K forward for myopia control approval.
Hence a daily contact lens for myopia control. It's just more financially rewarding for them. Jen, I have a question for you about this. What age do you stop doing myopia control?
Well, I tell my patients that as long as the eye is healthy and they're not having any sort of side effects, I would love to continue through when they, like around 16 or driving age time. For many of my kids, a low-dose atropine or an Ortho-K lens, maybe a soft multifocal lens, there's some slight potential vision side effects of all three modalities. And when you start talking about getting a kid behind a wheel in my opinion, like precise vision may, if they're having some vision side effects, where they're not a perfectly crisp clear 20/20, I suddenly want to maybe shift more towards a perfectly crisp clear 20/20. But I have plenty of kids that are in their 20s in college and wearing their Ortho-K lenses and loving it. So not everybody has like imperfect vision where they would feel like they're driving at night would be affected.
Yeah, you know, that's what I was getting at, because I have a lot of college kids that come in, and, you know, back in the day, I would see, you know, 20 to about 25 years of age for folks that were potentially getting ready to do refractive surgery. But now I've seen that number or that range shift. You know, it's more late 20s. So I was thinking, you know, would you utilize this for folks that's in college, being that they do have a high near demand, a lot of reading, not really looking out at a distance as much. So I was just wondering, you know, what age do you offer it? What age do you stop whenever this daily lens actually comes out next year?
I think if you're doing it for myopia control, once you get into your 20s, there's probably not too much more myopia change that's going to happen, especially once you're through with your college years. I would say 22, 23. Mm-hmm. I'm not so worried about myopia progression anymore.
Gotcha.
Jackie, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, so occasionally I will get someone, well, no, actually, I should say this question is pretty frequent of like when they feel like their prescription is going to change. I'm sure people ask you guys these questions, like, is it going to keep going? And I feel the same. I'm always like, you should be good now at like 22, 23. I don't really feel like anything's going to happen. But I think, so I'm in agreement with you. I mean, it really depends. I feel like it's really, then I'll have like a law student or attorney, new attorney, prove me wrong, because then they always get more nearsighted when they're in law school. Have you seen that? Like, I get all these attorneys.
Absolutely. Where I'm at right now, I'm surrounded by 3 law schools. So yeah. I see that, and also med school. So that's what I'm saying. I see a lot of that, and it's a little later on.
Yeah, right. So then I'm like, okay, well, okay, yeah, I was wrong. I guess it was going to get a little
Yeah, but I mean, it's the same thing. Like, okay, pregnant woman, she could have a refractive shift. You know, like there's some things with lifestyle that aren't true, like your body's growth hormones telling the retina to lengthen, that could still impact their prescription. So
yeah,
I don't think that we're actively going to be prescribing myopia control lenses for people to wear their entire lives. Though okay. I guess maybe you do have like, oh, I know you're going back to college, let's put you on myopia control lenses for the next 4 years or something. I mean, it wouldn't be a bad thing potentially.
I think it's going to be interesting how it plays out, how people will end up using it, because you can do it different ways, you know? I mean, just the ways we've talked about, people may end up doing it that way, but yeah.
Well, for interesting. Outside, what else do you have on deck for us, Jackie, as far as new approvals?
I know, I was like, all we're going to talk about is
we can just talk about myopia control the whole time.
All right, next up is CEQUA. So this is really, it was approved back in 2018, but I'm bringing it up because it officially launched this year. CEQUA is cyclosporin 0.09%. It's different than Restasis, which is 0.05%, but it's different in 2 ways. And 1 is the concentration, and then 2 is the vehicle in which the cyclosporin is delivered. So Restasis is, as I said, cyclosporin 0.05%. So CEQUA is a stronger concentration. And then CEQUA's vehicle is this nanomicellular formulation, which allows for better penetration through the aqueous layer. So one of the things that is always questioned is, well, okay, is it going to work faster? And that was the same question that we had about Xiidra when that came out. And according to their results, it does. The company is Sun Pharma. They stated that there's improvements in ocular staining assessments were seen as early as 1 month after initiating treatment. So the dosing is just like it is with Restasis. It's BID. They're packaged in single-use preservative-free vials. Cost-wise for this, I haven't yet prescribed CEQUA, but they do have the CEQUA Support Specialty Pharmacy, which can help like verify benefits and help with prior auths. So have either of you used this? Daryl, I know you love Xiidra.
You know, I have not, and I have not seen a rep. So you guys need to get your stuff together if you listen to this podcast, because I'm all about relationships. I need to know more. How about yourself, Jen?
Yeah, I as soon as you started talking about this, I was like, I still know, I feel like nothing about this drop. I haven't really had a chance to learn much about it in the field. I have not written a prescription. I haven't seen a coupon. I haven't seen a sample. So it's still a question mark for me. I will say that I prescribe a lot of Xiidra and Restasis. It seems like it is harder than ever to get these medications well covered at the pharmacy. The coupons don't seem to be as good as they used to be or don't work as well. I'm getting way more phone calls back from the pharmacy for both of them saying, oh, it's $1,200 what you called me in. So if someone's going to come into this area and have a really good product and actually have a price point where my patients can get the medication, I am all for it. But I will wait, I guess, to see once I get some resources to actually be able to prescribe it.
Yeah.
I agree with you, Jen. I just think they're not showing us any love in a Raleigh-Durham carrier area. So, Sequa, get your life together. Come holla at us, man. We need some of your products, all right?
I've actually heard that in other places, too. I don't think it's just you guys. I haven't seen a rep for it either, but it's just so, you know, stark difference between, like, the Xiidra launch, which I was like, I visited by the rep before Xiidra was even out. They didn't even tell me what they were talking. Like, it was like, we just want to say hi. And I'm like, what's your drop? And they're like, we can't tell you. And I was like, okay, what was the point of this? But they were like all over the place. And then I feel like Sequa is like, had this launch, but like there's no one there. So.
And Jackie, you know, what's so crazy is that people have been looking for an alternative to Restasis, and for them to have something that seems like it may be a better product and it actually works quicker, faster. You would think they would be all over the place marketing that, but they're not doing a great job with it. And as we know in the eye care industry, marketing is everything.
Yeah. Yeah. True. Okay. So let's move on. I've got another one. So this one is more retina driven. So this one is called BioView, which is a new anti-VEGF agent. It's brolucizumab, if anyone knows that or pays attention to what those names are. But there's three ways that this is different than all the other anti-VEGF options we have. So number one is the molecular size, two is the drug concentration, and three is the time between injections. So BioView is the smallest anti-VEGF molecule tested in humans to date. So this small size is important because it allows for better tissue penetration and the ability to administer higher drug concentrations. So those two things will lengthen the treatment effect, which is allowing for more time between injections. This BioView was shown to be just as good as Eylea in their phase 3 trials. So this is the results from the Hawk and the Harrier trials. So one question, why do we need this if it performs the same as Eylea? And there's one really important thing. So the vision improvement between both BioView and Eylea was similar, but the decrease in the central subfield thickness, so the retinal fluid, was significantly greater with BioView than Eylea. And Eylea is approved for 12 weeks dosing, which is what BioView is also. So that's similar in that regard too. But the biggest difference here was the amount of retinal fluid reduction in BioView versus Eylea.
What about cost wise, especially being that it's less injections?
So I think there's a big drive into kind of get less injections going, I think, from a healthcare burden perspective, but also a patient risk perspective. I don't know the cost of BioView versus Eylea. I'm not sure how much this is actually in clinical use at this point. I don't work with retina, so I'm not sure how the acceptance has been for this one, but no word on the actual price of this.
I did a quick research for us, and it says Novartis has set the list price of BioView at $18.50 per vial, which matches the per dose price for Eylea.
Yeah.
So they came in at the same price.
Yeah.
Interesting.
you know what will be interesting too is there's another company, and I think it's Genentech, that's working on the Reservoir. Have you guys seen this yet? This is not,
no.
This is sort of,
tell me about it.
Okay. So this is really cool. So what they do is implant this sort of port is what they're calling it in the OR. And then you can refill in the office injections like into this port that does a slow release of anti-VEGF. I think they're testing it with just anti-VEGF now, but likely it will be for other things. But it's essentially a port that you can just then, you should Google this too, because this is actually really cool. This was actually on the cover, I think, of the American Academy of Ophthalmology, their journal. It's like a picture of a patient, and it's just sort of just underneath the conge, but you can kind of, you can see the port. But it's better in that it can, you can load that reservoir up and then it has slow release. And then the risk of infection is a lot less if you've got, if you're not doing actually in all these injections every 12 weeks. I forget the length of duration. I should be a little more knowledgeable about this if I'm going to bring it up, but I forget the duration between when you have to do the refill. But the other thing that's nice is patients don't always come back for their, you know, 8 week or their 12 week. And if you've got a reservoir that's doing slow release, that's lasting longer than that, then it's, you know, the concentrations, you know, kind of there longer. So that's really cool. I think that's Genentech that's working on that. That's an aside.
Jackie, I'm so glad you brought up this port, because this is something that I think is going to change our profession and ophthalmology really significantly when it becomes approved and kind of standard of care for these patients. And the reason I say that is we know there's a huge ophthalmology shortage, and most of our retina specialists could basically just spend all day as soon as they get into the office doing injections. Like, that's how many patients need injections and how frequently they need injections. And with the port, now you potentially create a gray area where, are you really doing an intraocular injection with the same risk? You're just refilling a port. Does that mean that a nurse practitioner or a technician or an optometrist could refill that instead of it being an ophthalmologist? And it's going to create some interesting gray areas for the future of retinal injections, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, let's do another one. Yes, let's do Rocklatan. Okay, so Rocklatan's a drop used once a day to lower IOP, and it's a combo of two drugs, latanoprost and Rhopressa. Rhopressa was FDA approved at the end of 2017. So that's not, well, that's newish, I guess. So Rocklatan works in two main ways. It increases uveoscleral outflow. Latanoprost works here. And then it also increases outflow through the trabecular meshwork by inhibiting Rho kinase. And this is where Rhopressa works. So side effects are pretty typical, except that there was a seemingly larger amount of conjunctival hyperemia in 59%. And then others include instillation site pain, a conjunctival hemorrhage, and then some whirling on the cornea. From an IOP lowering standpoint, according to their studies, it's 1 to 3 points lower than monotherapy with just either Rhopressa or latanoprost. So I think this is now out, probably because I think it was earlier in 2019 when this was actually approved, but I am, in Massachusetts, so we don't treat glaucoma here. So I haven't actually used this myself. Do you guys, have you guys used this or heard of this drop?
Yes, I've heard of it.
Yeah, I've heard of it, but I don't use it. I don't use it, but I've heard of it.
Yeah. So I'm the same way. I have not prescribed it. I do think, yes, I love the idea of getting an additive effect over latanoprost. I mean, that's all great. But right now on the market, I've also got Vyzulta in that category. And 59% conj hyperemia and subconj hemes, corneal whirling that I've read case reports could actually cause vision side effects. That's more side effect than I want to have to deal with when I'm managing my glaucoma patients. So for me, if I'm wanting something above and beyond a prostaglandin, I'd probably go Vyzulta first.
Yeah.
And with this aging population, I mean, that makes sense to me. Like, everyone is getting dry eyes, it's getting worse day by day. So anything that you can do to reduce that, you know, with medications, by all means, you need to go that route.
Okay, I'm going to bring up two other ones for the sake of time here. But one is Lodamax SM, which is the Lodoprednol. It's a new gel formulation, and it's indicated for the treatment of post-op inflammation and pain following surgery. So the SM of this stands for submicron technology. It's one of the ways that this is different from like the regular Lotemax gel. So it delivers a submicron particle size for faster drug dissolution in tears. And because of this, it provides 2 times greater penetration to the aqueous humor compared to the Lotemax gel. So that is out. I don't know if you guys have used any of this. I kind of...
Absolutely. I prescribe it at least once a day.
Oh, my gosh.
Do you really?
Yeah. You're seeing a lot of inflammation over there, Dr. Glover.
Well, I dabble in a little bit of dry eye as well. And we do get a lot of, let me tell you, Jen, we see everything underneath the sun over in Briar Creek. I mean, we have everything from diabetic retinopathy to HIV retinopathy to extreme dry eyes to moderate dry eyes. I mean, it's no longer just your typical millennial or younger patient glasses and contacts. I mean, it's real over here in this area. And it's also because we are surrounded by an aging population. I mean, there are 3 adult communities over here. You know, one of the biggest ones, I think, in North Carolina, and then there's one that's a little smaller next to it. And now they're starting to build a complex like a condo for a 55 plus community as well. And then when you add the RTP, all the people on the computers and stuff of that nature and all the college students, I'm getting everything that you can think of underneath the sun coming into the doors.
Question for you, because I know you're talking about a lot of aging population. Have you had issues with coverage if they're on a Medicare-based plan?
Yes, I have. And a lot of times I end up having to switch over to, I'll try FML if it's covered. If not, then I have to go to the PRED, you know, and I hate to use that, but, you know, sometimes you just have to do what you have to do in order to get things done. It sucks, I must admit.
Why not do, isn't Lotemax generic now? Didn't it go generic?
I didn't hear about that.
I thought that happened. I'm almost positive. I'm going to find out.
Pretty sure that, yeah. I think that was why the Lotemax SM has come out, is because Lotepretinol has become a generic option. Acorn has a generic version now of Lotepretinol.
Ah, are you using that?
I haven't, because like I'm so used to... For my patients that I know I'm not going to get branded drops, writing them PRED, but that is something that I should consider. So this is a good, I hope I'm not the only idiot that hasn't been thinking like prescribe generic Lotemax, because that would be a much better thing to do than prescribing so much PRED for my 65 and up.
Yeah. Yeah. I was unaware of it, but it makes sense. So when I get back into the office on Thursday, I'm going to, you know, use that and see how it works out.
Jackie, you just changed 2 prescribers right here live on TV.
The power of 2020 glance.
Okay, I'm going to tell you about one other one because I think this one's really cool too. This one is called iBox, and this is the first non-invasive test to help diagnose a concussion. So this works where a patient will watch this 4-minute video while the software analyzes their eye tracking. Their clinical trial showed a noticeable difference in eye movements between normal patients and those with brain injuries. The deal right now, there's actually a really good TED Med talk by the co-founder, who's a neurosurgeon that co-founded the company. It's maybe, I don't know, 10 minutes or less. It's really a good TED Med if anyone's really interested in this. But what she was talking about is that there isn't a really good objective way to measure a concussion, nor is there a good way to quantitatively measure if a patient is getting better or not. And so they're saying because iBox gives an actual scored report, it can be used to monitor improvement over time. One of the other points that's highlighted is why is it sort of important to detect a concussion? All kinds of reasons, but one of them is something called second impact syndrome, or SIS. And this is a rare but serious condition in which a second concussion occurs before a first concussion has properly healed. And this can cause rapid and severe brain swelling. So this thing's really cool.
So tell me this, what is your protocol when someone comes in and they say, hey, Dr. Jackie, hey, Dr. Jennifer, my son had a concussion. My daughter had a concussion. What do you do when a patient tells you that?
So I think, one, this isn't going to be, and I don't Well, I shouldn't say that.
Well, more of what you do, not that protocol, what they have going on, but what do you do in your office when someone comes in and asks or tells you that?
I usually will defer to the pediatrician. So call the pediatrician about it, but I'll certainly do, I do a lot of, like, I'll do eye tracking, check saccades, check pursuits, check vision, look at accommodation. So I'll do general eye things, but then I'll certainly have them follow up with the pediatrician because I'm kind of unclear what they really do for diagnosing a concussion. I'm out of the loop on that, so I don't really know.
Yeah, me too. That's why I'm asking. I mean, what are you doing, Jen?
I mean, yeah, this literally just came up last week on Friday. I had a patient who had been in a car accident 2 weeks ago, and he was worried he may have suffered a concussion. And so his primary care doctor had ordered an MRI, or I'm pretty sure it was an MRI, and he was seeing an ENT to get those imaging scans done like the following week. But they also said, go to your eye doctor. And so I did it. I mean, like, his pupils were normal. We checked vision. It was normal. He didn't have diplopia. All his EOMs were normal. Like, basically all I could really do was just tell him everything looks normal. And that means maybe you still could have had a concussion. Because if he had had a pupil irregularity, I could say it for sure. But you could also have all normal testing on all of our normal eye exam stuff and still have had a concussion. So I did feel really at a loss help, and I ended up referring him. Then my practice, founding doctor, Alicia Barnes, she is a COVD trained vision therapy specialist. And so I know we can sometimes see results on saccadic eye movement tests. So I send him for a binocular vision eval with her to see if she could find something on like a King-Devick test or something. But I'm worried that it might have had to have been a bit more acute than 2 weeks ago for us to have seen those issues.
This is a great conversation because I think there is a lot of unknown, and not just within eye care, but also even within neurosurgery and neurologists. It's hard to diagnose something like this. I mean, this is, I encourage you to watch this TED Med talk with this neurosurgeon talking about it, because she's kind of like, even like MRIs, our best scanning, doesn't really pick this up. Like, we can't always see anything here. So I think that's why this is sort of like, oh, this is like a really interesting device. It has this scored report. You can see it on their website, but I think they would envision this being in ERs or on, you know, sports medicine clinics or on the football field. I mean, this is not really a huge device in general, but interesting anyway.
I will say that a couple of years ago, there was an article, I can't remember if it was Review Optometry or another, but the King-Devick test, they have people using them on football sidelines right after potential head injuries or concussions, because it will throw off your eye muscle movements like right away. So all the football players will have baseline King-Devick test done, and then someone will give them the test afterwards when they're on the sideline and see if their results have really plummeted as a way to try to diagnose concussion on the field. But this would obviously be a lot more streamlined and scientific than giving someone a King-Devick test probably.
Can you tell me what that is?
So I am not of it, but it's basically, you've got those, like, it's like rows of numbers, and you read them vertically first, and that's like a baseline timing. And then you read them horizontally, and it's basically seeing how fast you can do like a whole page of like horizontal numbers. And if you skip ones, miss ones, things like that. And so basically you're trying to find saccadic or pursuit ocular motor dysfunctions, but you can use it in showing, like, if there's a concussion, it's throwing off your saccades and your pursuits.
So I will say that one of the points on this iBox device is that you're not able to like game the system, and you don't need a baseline test. So that's useful if you don't have, you know, someone that is able to do it, like a baseline before, you know. So this could be general public, not less low, like a football team that you're sort of monitoring. But, you know, in some of these, I think, devices, there's an ability for the player to maybe game the system to be able to say like, oh, I'm doing better or I'm doing worse, you know. And I don't totally know, but she comments on this in her TED Med talk that this, there's no way to game it. Like, it's really just monitoring, you know, your tracking and how they do on this report. And so it's sort of more accurate in that regard.
Yeah, send a link to that so we can add it to the companion post. That'd be great for folks to review as well.
Yeah, we'll have all of these, all the items that we've talked about, we'll have links on our website. So if you guys want to read more, hopefully we whetted your appetite, because I know when we started this conversation, I was like, you know, not a whole lot happened in 2019. Like, I knew we were going to talk about my site because that was a really big thing, but I couldn't really think of anything else I was excited about. And Jackie, you really brought a ton of exciting, really game-changing things to the plate that I hadn't even considered, not only affecting us in 2020, but I mean, maybe even the future of our profession and our laws when we talk about these intraocular ports for anti-VEGF.
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting things that are going to be happening in the next couple of years. So it's good. I'll keep you updated.
So Jackie, if folks want to actually stay updated and abreast of, you know, the latest and greatest news in eye care, what's the best way for them to follow you and also to get the information in regards to your newsletter?
So you can subscribe at 2020glance.com. And then that will bring you to a page that has all the previous issues. So you can read through those when you want to have a good time.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast. And remember, we keep it 2020 around here. Pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.